The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back. Lord knows they'll try to silence our voices. They'll pretend to be patriots fighting for fairness for all.
All righty, we're back with the second hour. It's Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022. And not sure whether we're going to get to some calls or not, but we're going to let Roger continue so that we can try to get all of this spit out. Go ahead, Roger.
As you can tell, you know, we get into issues like this, there's a lot more that it's important background than meets the eye, okay? This is a pretty deep subject, especially when you get into the research that John and Glenn have done here and given us these answers. So the reason that I know this so well is because, you know, the Fed sent them to Club Fed for 15 years. Separately, you know, one of them for 9, the other for 6. That not for any of this tax stuff or anything they were teaching, that just because they were onto the thread and they were going to get them off the street come hell or high water. Okay. And so it took them a long time to get them where they convicted them. But when they did, they sent them to separate facilities. See, and they'd been studying all this stuff. They'd gotten a hold of these books and they had been studying this when all this was happening. They were getting prosecuted. And so then they get convicted and they get sent. Glenn was sent to Northern Minnesota, Duluth, I think. They got a minimum security facility up there. And they sent John at 80 something years old in poor health to one of the only unair-conditioned facilities in the entire Bureau of Prisons in Petersburg, Virginia. All right. And so Glenn is a very spiritual guy. He's always looking for spiritual stuff and going down those paths. And so he wanted to get involved in some ministerial program they had inside BOP for prisoners, you know. And so he applied, and this is where the fickle finger of fate, the bureaucrat fat finger of fate comes into play, Tom, because whoever it was that made that decision had several options to send Glenn to, but they pressed the button that said Petersburg, Virginia. And so through the bureaucrat fat finger of fickle of fate, they sent Glenn to the same prison John was in, and they could spend 4-plus hours an afternoon together going over all this information and compiling it and understanding it to the point where they could write that book. And so they didn't have, at that point, Glenn had not scrounged a typewriter, which was very verboten in there, but somehow he eventually got one. But in the early stages of this, what they would do is send all those handwritten documents to me, and I would type it up and send it back to them in prison. And so that's one of the reasons I know this stuff, you know, so well, too. And they've kind of turned all that over to me. And so I want to always make sure people know this is not my research, okay? This is my teacher's stuff. I'm just representing them, all right? And so we were talking about the Praetor a minute ago and how these self-help remedies and their importance, how they operate, and how they have had and affected such great change throughout history. I maintain that these guys, as they make these switches and turn tyrannical, that this is one of their frontline instruments that they use, are these self-help remedies. Because if you've ever seen the IRS come in and grab somebody's car or clean out their bank account or go and garnish their wages or something, all you impute to these guys is pure power. You have no idea that these are established merchant law procedures and documents that are working in the background that are giving them this power to come grab your stuff. And you impute things into them like superhuman powers that they just flat don't have. Okay, so that's one of the reasons it's important. And realizing that this is our cunning enemy, and they are cunning, as you know, if you've studied this very much, is that they take things like this and weaponize them and play mental games with people and herd them like animals. And that's what's going on, okay? But in this case, the Australian sheepdogs are called lien, levy, garnishment, and seizure, all right? And they're nipping at your heels over there. And they're all come in operation out of this clause in a contract called a recognizance clause. And if something doesn't happen, it triggers the remedy, and the remedy is pre-written into the contract. So in Rome, as Rome developed and the merchants that used these types of instruments came to Rome, the Roman citizens, seeing the easy way that they could achieve remedy instead of the painful long way that they had to, would go to the praetor, who was only in the position for a year. Rome was smart enough to know they wouldn't leave them in there to accumulate power. So generally, as they changed praetors every year, the praetor that was being put in, for the most part, followed all the group of laws that the previous ones had established. But over a period of 200 years, and people nagging at the praetor to bring these into their law, they're just called the jus civile, the law of the civilian, the jus civile, and what it did was transfer into what we call the Roman Civil Code that's in the U.S. law school and libraries. When you go in there and you see United States Code, that's the Roman civil law. This is where it came from. Okay, and over a period of 200 years, under the color of law that a Roman citizen was a foreign merchant, the praetor changed the group of laws that ruled Rome from the common law over to the merchant law hybrid. That's what we're dealing with today.
Hey, Roger. Yes. I hate to break your chain of thought here and anything. I got one caller that called in and he's been sitting there, and maybe we get his if he can make it real quick, if he's got a real quick question for you, do you think you want to take that and get him?
I guess so. Might as well bring him on. But
all right, we got Ollie in West Virginia, so okay. I don't know.
Okay,
but I can't. You know, we're not going to take any more calls right now. So until Roger's finished, go ahead, Ollie.
Well, if you want to hear it, how all this fits together, then, you know, I need the time to cover it. But can we help you, Holly? How you doing, sweetie?
I just wanted to tell you that I did apply for a passport card.
Okay,
and
good
I didn't
for
know
you.
If you want, it was rather interesting. They had never heard of what I was applying for. They say they get a lot of passport requests for people who are immigrating into the country. Anyway, that's not going to be available for, they told me, about 11 weeks, so I'm almost halfway through that.
Well, I'd like to talk to you more about that. Now's not the time, because either I've never heard them reply like that to anybody's request, so I don't know if it was something you did or if they're just trying to play bluff games, because we've heard recently that they've gotten over 3 million of these change of status forms up there.
Huh, okay.
All right, so try back on night when we can cover it more, Holly, and not get deviated, okay?
Right, okay, all right.
All righty,
okay.
Thank
you. Very good, thank you.
All right, bye. Okay, so, yeah, just if we got time at the end, but I want to make sure, because now I'm going to tell you how our system works and how that has been brought forward and how they've got this one rigged against you, okay? So that's where I wanted to go with this and make sure we had plenty of time to cover it, because this is, it's almost like a program of its own, this taxation thing, if you want to get an accurate background where you really have an understanding and can get your arms around it a bit. So these self-help remedies that are incorporated into the IRS are extremely important. For example, Tom, have you ever had a tax lien against you?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, I'm sure some of the listeners have. Okay. They've been very liberal with those things over the years, and some of the amounts are astronomical. Okay. And see, what we got to realize when we know the national side of this equation, then you can understand that the reason the taxation becomes so important, it's not because they want, I mean, sure, they want the money, of course, but this is to extract your future labor to make the phrase, the full faith and credit of the United States, viable. Okay? This is the insurance behind the bonds, because the full faith and credit of the United States is that they can extract out of your backside your future fruits of your future labor through this tax system, so they can pay the bondholders their coupon payments. This is the meat of the system, and it's not just necessarily because they're greedy and want a bunch of money. They do that. Obviously, they're like that. But, you know, they're making it on so many different levels and so many different angles, it's ridiculous. If we ever sat back and really analyzed how many layers of compound interest they got stacked here in this procedure on how the money's created, it's tied to the bonds, how they're both sold and floated and circulate, all the different levels of interest and compound interest in there is staggering, okay? So this tax thing to them, I wouldn't think it's the big, but it's important because it helps to make the whole system work. And what they do, and I've heard, and that of what the IRS collects, a third is uncollectible. A third goes to pay overhead, salaries, building, because they got to rent their own buildings. They don't get in federal buildings. Okay? They're not. They're not a federal agency. If you go look under Title 28, which is the Treasury volume in the United States Code, there's a list, I don't know what section's in there, but there's a list of all the organizations that are under Treasury. And IRS isn't in it, okay? So they're a foreign entity. It's in further proof that they have to go and rent their own buildings. Otherwise, they'd be in government buildings. Well, they're not. They're through the International Monetary Fund. So they got to rent their own buildings. So all that overhead and a third of what's left goes to pay the bondholders. Now, what's been going on over the last number of years, that they've really, this is, the financial system is basically at its wit's end. That's part of what, in my opinion, the Ukraine's all about over there. They always got to start a war when they get to the point where their financial system's about to get totally exposed. Remember a couple of years ago, Tom, they were doing these overnight repo things in the banking system, and they were sometimes having to put $1 trillion in overnight or more into the banking system on these things called repos. I don't know if you remember that or not, but that
Yeah, that was them. They were running short, and they had it. You know, the banks were coming up on their like the extra money they got to have. I'm trying to remember what repo means.
Here's what it was. That is the rate that banks lend to other banks in what they call overnight loans, short-term overnight loans, to cover their reserve requirements. You know, banks have reserve requirements in the way the system's set up on how much cash they've got to have on hand versus how many loans they've got outstanding. And they can fluctuate that's called the reserve requirement. And so for banks to meet their reserve requirement, if they're short, they borrow from others. They borrow from their synagogue buddies, okay? And so they go in there, and that's usually, in their book, it says you can't charge interest to other Jews, go charge it to the Gentiles. All right? So they keep that stuff very low, let's say 0.5%, 0.25%. All right. Well, back then, a couple of years ago, the bankers they know how shaky the system is, and they don't trust each other. They're synagogue buddies, and the spike in the interest rate went up to 10%. Okay, so that's how apprehensive they were about loaning money short-term overnight to each other. Okay, so that shows you how on the back wheels the whole financial system was, and that's about what we're about to experience right now. Okay, all this coming to a head. But let's get back to our little tax thing, which is the meat of all this, so they can continue the scam and have the proceeds to pay the bondholders. Now, what's been happening in the last number of years, as people realize the financial condition of the U.S., they've been dumping bonds. These big investors, man, they're dumping it. In Russia, though, why do you think one of the reasons they hate Putin? They've been dumping all their U.S. bonds for years and going in and taking the proceeds and buying gold. Their central bank is balance sheet is loaded with gold, all right?
Yeah, and now so, he's destroying. Now they're destroying the value of the ruble. You know, did you hear? I don't listen to what's his name last night. He called it the rubble, like Barney Rubble.
No, but I know they're trying to screw with taking them out of Shift and stuff, Swift. But then they're leaving it open where that's the only country we got to buy fertilizer from. They've still got the. We're buying fertilizer from Russia while we're shutting them out of SWIFT. That's why these
aren't they still?
Are
we still buying oil from them too? Aren't we still buying oil from them too?
Well, probably. Okay, because they're shutting it off at our place. Yeah. But anyway, so all that is worked into the situation of what's happening now geopolitically. Okay, is baked in the cake, a big ingredient. Least you not forget also that the Ukraine, and you'll hear very few people draw this. A parallel and connect these dots for you. But if you'll go back and study the Khazars, which are the origin of the Ashkenazi Jews, the majority of Jews in the world, Khazaria was the Ukraine. Okay? So it's their homeland too. And part of the reason is because of what they've been doing inside the Ukraine for so many years, all right? And but so it's very complex, but that's very true. You can go back and research it on your own. Let's get back on our tax rail, though, here, if Tom, so we get it finished up here. And I'm going to show you the way that our system works, okay? Now, with our system, you either remember when you get that mailing we were talking about earlier, and I remember getting booklets where they had a whole, you know, I don't remember how many pages, but it's kind of a thick little booklet you get in your mail, right? And there on the front page, they had a statement that says, our system's based on voluntary compliance, right? You remember that?
Oh, yeah, it always says it right there at the beginning in the front of the tax 1040 book.
Until so many people started questioning if they took it out eventually. But, you know, all these guys go, well, hell, I don't choose to voluntarily comply, so I'm not going to go get involved.
Self-assessment and voluntary compliance.
Sure, self. And so, and it is, you know, they're not lying to you. It is a voluntary system. But what they do is they rig it on the back end and use fear, just like they use so consistently with everything else, and use this self-help remedy nipping at your backside and getting your stuff, you know, that you get into the compliance mode and line, all right? So here's the process. Let's say that you don't voluntarily comply. Chances of you getting audited or something, they're always there, but it's, you know, and the threat's always there, but it's not really that realistic, you know, although they've caused some people some grief, I guess. But regardless, well, and don't forget, I mean, it was Al Capone. They got him on income tax evasion. And guess who else they charged recently with income tax? Was that Harvard professor Lieber? That's the key to all this micro stuff that's going into the vaccines. And they caught him taking money directly from the Chinese, $50,000 a month, and bringing back suitcases with millions of dollars in it. They charged him with income tax evasion, too. No espionage, no treason, no nothing else, which he absolutely had done. They charged him with income tax, okay? So anyway, that's the way they creatively use this stuff. So if you don't file and you're going to be a bad little boy, then you start getting some correspondence from them. I don't know. I'm sure some people in the audience know the feeling I'm talking about. When you walk out to the mailbox and you get your mail, and right there on top is something from the Internal Revenue Service.
It does not
make your day. Okay.
For years, I used to love to get them. I was waiting for the mailman. Oh, you got anything from the IRS for me today? because every time they sent me a letter, I'd send them two or three back asking them a bunch of questions they'd never answer.
Right. Well, and they usually, if you haven't filed in a while, they've got a booklet. The federal government's got a book on the numbers that they've assigned all these different types of letters that they send and different correspondence, okay? And I remember seeing that years ago. And the one that we're gonna talk about here in a minute is there's a series of four of them, so it's an escalating series. And so if you haven't filed and they catch you, you don't fall through the cracks somehow, okay? Or you don't file an affidavit with the Secretary of State and put them on notice that they no longer have jurisdiction on you, which we've done incredibly successfully, okay, for years now. And so if you don't do either one of those things and they're still coming after you, you'll get this letter, Tom, and it reads something like this. It says, "Dear Tom D., we haven't received your tax return for the year 2017, 2018, 2019, but if you've already filed these, please disregard this notice. However, if you haven't, we may ask you to come in and bring some of your books and records, et cetera, et cetera. Hi, your friends at the IRS." You ever seen one of those?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Have you? Okay.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Good. All right. Well, what'd you do with it?
Well, you take that letter, you go in and see them, you have everything that they ask for, and as soon as they start asking you questions, you ask them, "Am I required to show you all this?" And they say, "Well, you know, you got to do whatever you got to do." And I say, "Well, I don't think I'm going to answer that question. What's your next question?" And then you can't take blanket Fifth Amendments against them. You got to do them one at a time.
Well, let me tell you what that instrument is. That ain't just a letter informing you of that. This is another one of these little merchant law deals, and you can go look it up and study on it. It's called a confirmatory writing. Have you ever heard of those?
I don't think so. You'd have to explain it.
Well,
maybe I understand.
It's a contract in, again, specialty contracts of the Uniform Commercial Code, and the description is it's a writing between merchants who are both apprised of the contents of the writing. And when you receive one, if you don't expressly deny the contract within 10 days, it's deemed accepted.
Yeah, I think I may have written them back at the beginning and asked them questions, and then eventually ended up in their office, and then they just wouldn't give up. So I actually followed one of their agents home and served them with a cease and desist, and then the whole thing blew up and they went away.
Okay. Well, this is normally what happens, and the way the process is structured from a merchant law and a progressive way. As the best that these guys have been able to come up with, okay? So this was John's concept because it is a voluntary system. And most of our guys and girls, when they get that letter, either don't respond like you did or certainly throw it in the trash can. Well, screw those guys, okay? Now they've got you accepting a contract on the front end, and now they can proceed legitimately. Okay, and I'm not saying it's not fraud. I'm just telling you the way these guys think and the way that we have come to ascertain that this system is structured. And when you find out the weaknesses in it is where you know where to attack. Okay, so at that point, you haven't filed, but you've gotten hooked into this little contract so they can move forward. Now, the reason that is so important is because the computer in Martinsburg, West Virginia, it's a master office of the IRS, is programmed to work correctly. And it has to have a statute staple contract in there because it's a voluntary compliance system. Okay? And so it goes down the line, and that goes to a certain extent, and then the computer won't let the process go any further. Now, let's hold it right there, and I'm going to give you some background here. When I was doing, the book first came out, my book, and I was doing a show every week with somebody that some of your listeners is going to recognize the name, familiar with his work. He's a great guy. He's a really early patriarch, especially in this Patriot Legal movement. And he's a Texas boy. And his name is because he's still with us, Al Adask. Okay? He was out of Dallas, Fort Worth. And some of you will remember Al and his famous Man and Other Animals story. Okay? And so, anyway, Al and I did shows together for about a year and a half there, years ago. Got a lot of valuable stuff that were big pieces of the puzzle for me later down the line came from Al Adask, okay? Well, he had a friend that was a guy, and man, his name just escaped me. But he had gone in, and you know, you can get copies of the IRS manuals, which are these generally big three-ring binder copies of the manuals that they use like on the computer in Martinsburg and how they do things and codes and this, that, and the other. Okay. And this guy had become an expert in the IRS codes.
Yeah, it's called the Individual Master File, the IMF.
Well, yeah, that's what it's
not the Impossible Mission Force.
Right. Well, it's all of the tools that they use to manipulate that Individual Master File. And there's right. just books and books and books of them, okay? And they're very complex. And so this guy, I just can't remember his name. I wish I could. But anyway, Al knew him and was very familiar with his work. And my guys, John and Glenn, knew the process, but they didn't know how it worked internally. And those two guys got together, okay? And so when Glenn and this guy, I believe his name was Lee got together, well, the whole process just fell together in front of them, see? And so at this critical point where the computer stops, because there hadn't been a statute staple filed, a 1040, to that point, they have to overcome that obstacle because it's got the whole system stopped as it pertains to that one individual. So what they do is they go in and they use a push code 09. This is funny because that's what's in the passport for national too. Push code 09. Never put those two together until just now, Tom. So push code 09, and what that does is it stops the computer and it allows someone to put into the procedure what's called a substitute for return.
Return. Yep, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Or a referred to as a dummy return, because a dummy stops the computer and puts it in there. So what it is a statute staple that they've signed for you and put the amount you owe in the assessment rolls. So just like to the office of the pipe, okay, they stopped the computer with this point of push code 09. They insert the dummy return with the amount on it. Now they start the computer again. Now the computer goes, oh, a 1040's been filed. Wham, we can go on to assessment. Oh, look, we've got an assessment number right here. Boom, you're on the assessment rolls, and they move on to collections. Okay, so yep. Here's what happened was after these two guys got together, Glenn and this fellow Lee, and hammered all this out, well, they found a case that was a doctor in San Diego, I don't remember his name, that they were after for two counts of failure to file, criminal. This carries criminal penalties. It's a jury trial, and it's supposedly in front of a jury of your peers. Okay, that's a whole nother two-hour show.
Yeah, really.
So anyway, they agreed. They found a law. He agreed to it. He got exposed to it. He said, man, let's try it, you know. Imagine him. He's about ready to try anything, right? Okay, so he was a very easy big guy to convince, I'm sure. So anyway, the other part of the deal was that Glenn would write all the process because he knew the process, and Glenn is a fantastic legal writer in mind, okay? Fantastic. Won a case for an inmate at the Supreme Court when he's in prison. And they had a guy that was the attorney that handled it. It was from North or South Dakota, I forget. And anyway, he's got a big plaque behind his desk that says, so-and-so won a case at the Supreme Court. It's the only attorney that's ever even argued a case from whichever of the Dakotas that is. And the attorney goes, and I didn't even write it. So this is Glenn, and that's the reason that both those books are the books they are. He's absolutely a brilliant genius. Okay,
so I think I remember having a big book on the IMF procedures and all that.
You probably did.
Racking my brain trying to think of who you're talking about.
Yeah, well, you did. Anyway, so Glenn decides to write all this for this doctor. He agrees, and so they take it into district court, and they try it at the district court level. They're fighting the federal government like crazy, see, and on the fact that they, you know, when you're going to file and you get in a lawsuit like that, you get depositions and interrogatories where the other side's got to be honest with you, right? Buddy, they will not come off of Push Code 09. They won't give it to them. They won't expose it under any circumstances, no matter how many times or how hard they try. So at the district court, they get ruled against, and then they took it to the Ninth Circuit, and they got ruled against in the Ninth Circuit, okay? And what Glenn told me was, he said, Roger, he said, it is so frigging complex that not only can't the jury understand it, the judge can't understand it either. And
how you're supposed to have a jury of your peers when they're all filing tax returns. You need to strike every single one of them until you find people that aren't filing.
A lot of those kind of things, you probably not hardly get a jury impaneled. So anyway, that got Glenn so upset and fed up with the whole mess, even when he had them dead to rights and couldn't get the goodies and couldn't get a ruling, that after being sent to jail for 9.5 years and everything else, he just walked away, man. He doesn't like to have anything to do with the movement, you know. And but anyway, that's they kind of passed the baton to me, and that's one of the reasons I represent their stuff. And but I give them, oh, man, I give them all the credit. You know, I've certainly contributed to what we've been able to find out and what we teach. And I'm proud of the contributions that I've made because they're very important. But I would have never been able to stand on anybody's shoulders that weren't as stout and as strong as these two guys. Okay? And I was a good student, and John Benson was a fantastic individual and a wonderful teacher. And he just studied this stuff because he loved it, man, and just had a curiosity about it his whole life, and he got into all this. And so that's where it's led. We now know, and you have at least been exposed to in some semblance, way, shape, or form, the whole background and history and the development of the income tax
system. You know, that's how they got rid of the, what was it, the 23rd Amendment for alcohol? Because one of the great things about the Constitution is that you could be tried in the jurisdiction of where the crime was committed. And if you're a bootlegger and all your buddies are bootleggers and they pick a jurors from the bootleggers, you're not going to be found guilty. So they finally got fed up with it and, you know, got rid of the prohibition on alcohol. And another reason they did it was because they were afraid that if people started thinking that if they could do that to moonshine, they could do that to everything, they had to get rid of that quick and get everybody to forget about it.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. We had that early incident in the early part of the country. I think Jefferson was the president when the Whiskey Rebellion happened, you know, and you had over there up where you used to live in Philadelphia, especially in the western part of Pennsylvania, and you had a lot of the Scotch-Irish back over there, which is the backbone of, you know, so much of our great American traditions that we treasure and talk about and cherish came from the Scotch-Irish and their influence over here, you know. And what they did was they were the ones that were doing a lot of whiskey making and stuff, and it was that Jefferson and them, I believe, sent the guys in to go after it under the tax auspices. But you got to understand, is for them that was like a currency. That was a way that they did a lot of trade, was they'd use whiskey as a commodity. You know, it was easy to ship. They wouldn't have to worry about their grains going bad and some of that stuff, and it was very, very accepted in the whole community. And so they considered it to be like a tax on money instead of a tax on liquor that you're selling to make a profit, which is the way we normally envision looking at a tax on liquor for. So the Important thing to go back, I think, Tom, and tie this into what the other things that I've been on with you talking about, and how to remove yourself from the federal system if you want to, and all the implications of that. And one of them, of course, is the fact that you can remove yourself from any of these government agencies. And most people, the number one they want to get shake free of is the IRS. And if you go back to, we were mentioned a couple of times, their Bible is 26 CFR, Code of Federal Regulations, and that is the code book of regulations that the agents follow and the IRS follows. Now, you know, Ralph Winterroot and I have paralleled when I was researching that more and I was fighting these guys in federal court is when I found this out, but I know Ralph's on the same page, and that's if you go into the federal regulations and get a little bit skilled at it, you can start tracing regulations back. Do you know about this, Tom?
Yeah, I've listened to Ralph a lot. And,
okay.
It's all administrative law.
Well, it is, and if you've got, and you look at a regulation at the bottom, if there's brackets there and a previous regulation is listed, then this is an update of a previous regulation. All right.
Yeah, it's like shepherdizing a case.
It's like shepherdizing a case, exactly the same thing. Okay. Well, when you start shepherdizing regulations, you'll find two things. None of them have ever gone through notice and comment. And that is what the process, again, that's due process, notice, and the right to be heard, notice and comment. So even in the regulatory scheme, when they've got one that's got what they call general applicability or a substantive regulation, it's got teeth for everybody, it's got to go through this due process approach. And if you go back and look at every IRS regulation, they go under a different process, and they're called interpretive regulations, okay? And they don't have general applicability. They only apply to the inside of the agency. So all of these regulations that they're using, the one I fought them over was a summons for books and records. You know, they're going to probe in your stuff. And I said, well, I'm going to fight them on this. Well, and going back and researching, unfortunately, the case had already happened. It's too late for me to use it. But I realized that all of them are interpretive regulations. Therefore, they have no effect on me. And I could have appealed it up to the 11th Circuit there in Atlanta, but I was not skilled at that, and I didn't want to get up there. And I know that's a viable reason. I knew at the time, more so, I didn't understand it as much contextually as I do now, but certainly I didn't want to go up there and get ruled against. And if you get to the appellate level in the system, now you got law that's precedent. Do you know how that works? How the court system works? Let's say you go to district court.
Yeah, stare decisis.
Okay. Well, here's the way it works. You got circuits, 11 circuits. The 11th circuit is in Atlanta, and it covers Georgia, Alabama, and Florida. And so district court cases that come up through any of those states and get appealed up go up to Atlanta to the 11th Circuit. Now, if it's a district court case in Florida and one that's got similar circumstances, say, in Alabama happens, well, those two are not, they're not what's called precedent. They can be what's termed persuasive. Or, I really like the way that judge with these same facts came to that decision. I think I'll let it influence my thinking here as another judge. That's called persuasive. But it's not, I got to follow this other decision, which is what we refer to as precedent. Now, if it goes to the 11th Circuit and they rule on it, it then does become precedent for those three states. Not for other circuits, but for those three states. And what the Supreme Court really likes to hear is if they've got two circuits that have a case with similar circumstances where they've arrived at differing opinions. And they call that diversity of opinion, okay? And so that's the way the precedent system works. And, of course, then the Supreme Court decides on it. Then it becomes supposedly binding precedent for the entire 11 circuits and all the district courts.
They're breaking the tie, basically. Okay. They're making, two against one.
Well, let me tell you the results of this case, this income tax case, out there that Glenn got so fed up over is after that case was found against them, the Department of Justice now has a nationwide moratorium in the entire federal court system that you cannot bring up Push Code 09 at any district court in the United States.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's where all that led, and that is where we're at. Okay, and that's why this national approach is so darned important, because, you see, here's the beauty of what we do is, you know, the success in life is duplicatability and consistency, okay? And, you know, you can go in any McDonald's restaurant almost anywhere on this globe, and the food tastes basically the same. A little different in Argentina because they serve wine at McDonald's in Argentina, but normally they don't, okay? And so that's consistent. And what you've got with our stuff, and that I've been working for with this for so many years, for 30 years now, constantly trying to understand it better myself, where I can explain it more simply, and that people can get uptake the information more quickly, and hopefully get to a point where they want to take action on it. Because numbers in this is our real hope. It makes us all stronger, and it makes them weaker, and it takes our natural advantage that they're super scared of, which is us having bigger numbers than they do, and it amplifies and magnifies that for them, because now not only are there numbers of people that are aware of exactly who they are and what they've done, but now they don't have any of this control over them through the administrative agencies, because you're a resident or a citizen of the United States, and it takes all their teeth away. They can't charge you with NDAA. All those guys that are in jail in D.C. from January 6th, they couldn't have put any of them in jail if they were nationals. Okay, and I'll bet you they'd have recognized it, because they don't want this issue coming out. Okay? And the more we get people interested in this and moving on it, the more it amplifies this relationship with our enemy, okay? I don't know what we can accomplish together, but I know that if we work as a team, we've got a solution that literally exposes these sorry, Sabbatean, Frankist, Zionist pieces of human garbage, okay, that have got all of these plagues on us, that have got all these controls on us, that have got all these tricks they've played on us, confirmatory writings, birth certificates as warehouse receipts, attached to bonds, all this crap with the taxes we've been going over for 2 hours, all of that, the harnesses of slavery. You can throw all that off. You can do it with one sentence, okay? So we get numbers of people realizing that and doing that. We got the ability to potentially change the game here. I don't know how big, and I don't know how big a change. But I know one thing, they're scared as hell of this, because it exposes them to the bone, and it takes away all their power. And they can't do a damn thing about it, except take the mask off and be open tyrants. And the only time they'll do that is when they got total control, like they did in Bolshevik Russia. Okay, so that's the power of what we're dealing with here. And this tax, as complex as it is kind of interesting. I think you'd probably agree. There's a lot of very interesting history in there. And it's a really, really important component out of this whole other situation, because this is where their teeth are.
Well, I have to admit, Roger, you have quite a bit of knowledge and an in-depth view of all of this. And you know, it's been years since I've looked into a lot of this stuff, and you've just, you know, like I said, I told everybody this a couple of times on our show previously. 45 years I've been looking for how is it that they've got this rope around our neck, and I've heard every possible excuse. You know, you're using Federal Reserve notes, you got a bank account, you got a Social Security number, the gold fringe flag, you're using capital letters, your name, all that crap. You know, just I just dismissed it because it just didn't make logical sense. And then when I was introduced to you and your information, it was just like a light went on, and I said, "This is it."
Well,
at least in my opinion,
all I do is present facts. Well, you can go check them out. It's not what Roger thinks is some big theory. I'm telling you history and facts, okay? And if you don't want to accept them, don't. I don't care. But there's more people that are looking for answers, and they want to get out of this thing, and it has the same effect on them, Tom, that it did on you. And they may not have 45 years in the trenches looking for answers. They may be just waking up to all this crap. But you see, when you get answers that are really truth in a complex situation, what I've found over the years that I've been doing this is all of a sudden, out of nowhere, just like with me with you, out of left field comes something, and bam, the minute it hits your consciousness, everything settles down. All the questions get answered, and they all fall right into place. And you go, I need to look at this and look at it real serious, okay? And that's what happens with all this stuff. All the dust settles, see, because all the questions are answered.
Yep, you know, instead of trying to fight your way through all these roadblocks, you know, we're just going to avoid that road, and we're just going to go around them and avoid it completely.
And that's why part of the big puzzle here, especially for your newer folks out there, honestly, is not getting sidetracked on this Admiralty Maritime Law stuff. I did not mention earlier, I talked about the Judith Shapiro article over there on the website, sovereigntosurf.com. And you can go over there. There's a really wonderful reference book that was published by John Hopkins University back in the 1930s. And the title of it is Historical Jurisprudence, and it's a history of jurisprudence, exactly what the title says. And the first 90 pages of that, it's an easy read, okay? The first 90 pages of it are on the Babylonian Merchant Code. And if you'll go put a little time into reading that and learning the origins and the basis of the Babylonian Merchant Code, you'll be able to identify quite easily the system of law that we're in, okay?
Yeah, for instance, speaking of books, buddy, one of our really sharp listeners, Robin, brought to my attention that she was trying to find John Benson's book, and the actual title is Taxation by Misrepresentation, okay. The Truth About Income Taxes in Plain English. So she just wanted to let everybody know. So that way, if you go looking for it, you'll be able to find it. So.
Yeah, and if you wanted to, you know, if you want to approach it and give credit to the people that spent their life getting this information, everything they went through, you can purchase it at the Book Patch. I believe you can find it out there on the web, and I don't think John would be terribly offended if you went out and found it and didn't pay for it, but if you want to, thebookpatch.com is the place you can get a printed version. You can get
that's what she was talking about. Yeah, that was where she was searching, so.
Yep, and John was an unusual, exceptionally unusual man, and he wasn't in any way, shape, or form physically impressive or noticeable. He's kind of a short, little dollop kind of guy, you know, a little overweight, loved food. But, man, when he'd get up there on the stage and start teaching this law, it's like he ripped his shirt up and there's a big Superman T-shirt on him, you know. He just turned into super teacher. And he had such a command of this and such a love of it. And, you know, when you love something, you've poured your life into it, you have that kind of command and passion about it, you know. And he was an amazing individual. I consider him to be my second father, really, because like my father gave me my physical life, John Benson gave me a life I could have never, ever envisioned. Honestly, that big a change, I consider it life number one and life number two. And that's what this information is for the right people. It's a life-changing stream of information. And it's almost like you never get tired of it because you never know it all. And you're constantly being presented with new facets of things you thought you understood, but you didn't understand that have some significance to you. You know, so as I say, the event is when you cross paths with this information. The rest of your journey with it is a process, and it's a process of learning, untying those double-minded knots they've tied in your minds with opposite definitions and all the realizations and personal growth that comes through it. And one of the most valuable things that I think I could tell your audience, Tom, is that, see, here's what happens. Instead of being in a downward spiral that is based on fraud with all of this man-made manipulation and slavery and stuff, now, because you're changed statuses, if you choose to do so, the dialectic, the opposite of that, takes effect, and you start learning this information, and it's like an incubation cell of this real, real rich, some kind of nutrient. And you put this information in your mind, and what happens is it starts giving and delivering you confidence. And that confidence, instead of being a downward dark spiral, is an upward light spiral, because it builds on itself in a positive way. And what is happening, I believe, is that you're being re-empowered with the powers that your Creator meant to have you at birth to have, that were stolen from you with this surreptitious little fraudulent system they've connived up, where they separated you from your God-given rights and spiritual connection at birth. And now you've been conditioned through the rest of your life. Well, now that that's changed, should you choose to change it, now the reverse starts happening, and you start getting the solder in there and the fertilizer, and you start getting incredibly personally empowered with these powers that you were meant to have. Okay? And the reason I tell you that is because I went through it personally. But this was back before I got on the radio and understood these things to the point I do now, certainly. And I wasn't teaching it to other people, but I was experiencing it, see? And then when I got on the air on RBN, I broke this information on another show on RBN 11 years ago, okay? So it was back full circle, Tom. And so when that started happening and I started getting students and it started affecting them, like it had affected me. And now, because I could see it, the change in them, I could identify it in me. And that's how I know that what I'm telling you is a reality. And it may not, if you don't learn the information, if you don't feel this is important to you, it may not sprout with you like that. But for the person that takes this as seriously as the information dictates, you have a chance to re-empower and be God's spiritual creature that He meant to be from birth, that you've been denied of. These bastards stole their birthright back. You get it? Edom stole his birthright back.
You know, you almost need your own show here, buddy. You know, you could you could do a hell of a show on, you know, just by everything you've got here going on. I know that it would be amazing. And, you know, so I want to let everybody know that we skipped almost all the breaks on this show today to bring you all this important information. So for those of you out there that are listening, and maybe you're new, maybe you're old, if you got a few extra bucks that you can send our way, if you're not doing that, we would really greatly appreciate it. You can send check, money order, cash wrapped up to RBN. And make out, if you're going to make out a money order check, make it out to the three letters RBN, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And if you want, there's a PayPal link on the website. And, you know, we really want to keep this thing going. I think we've done a really good job, Mike and Julie and Sam, of really pulled out all the stops to keep us going since John's passing, and I'd really feel terrible if we didn't keep this going on his behalf. So anything that you can do, if you're a regular donor, we greatly appreciate you. If you've been sitting on the fence, or you know you haven't donated and you're able to do it, we don't want to take food out of your children's mouth and things like that, but if you're able to do it and give us a hand, we'd greatly, greatly appreciate it. And we can keep people like Roger coming, you know.
You don't want this resource to go away.
Yep. We can keep people like Roger coming on the air and, you know, keeping you up with the greatest and the latest. So, you know, that's my speech.
Okay. Well, so we got a couple of minutes left.
Few minutes. Yep. You go ahead and close out. We got about 6 minutes, six minutes.
Well, you want, if anybody wants to call in, what's that number again? We got a little time here at the end. I didn't know if we would or not.
Yeah. 512. I wrote it down and I lost it on the thing here.
8252.
Yeah, there it is. I can remember the last four digits. I can't remember the middle.
Repeat it again, Mike. One of you two repeat it again. 512.
Go ahead, Mike.
512-248-8252.
Yep. Okay, so if anybody's got any questions or comments, we've got a couple of minutes. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure you and I can tap dance out 6 minutes, Tom. So you and I crossed paths in December, right? Had the first show. We talked a couple of times. You wanted to say, well, they tell me this guy's got the answers, and I've seen everybody else, and they never have them. And so that was everybody starts with a little trepidation, so that's fine. I understand it, okay? But now you've had a couple of months of sitting with the information and let it percolate a little bit back there in the subconscious, and it overwhelms you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's you know, but it's so simple. I mean, it's all the stuff that we've been reading over the years was like mind-boggling. How will I ever understand it? And what you've brought to the table is just like, it's like peanut butter and jelly, you know?
I mean, all right, you know what the Jim Crow laws were? Yes. They rigged up a system using fraud where they got you to volunteer into being Jim Crow. How complex is that?
Yep, very simple. I mean, it's really, really... Now, once you take a look at the Immigration Naturalization Act, it's just all makes sense.
We were talking on the show today, and I've got a number of folks that joined me over there on we have a weekday show that have come from our previous appearances with you, Tom. So somebody was calling in today and asking about this, and we kind of got off on it a little bit. And what we've found over the years, because our platform allows for group discussion, so it's like iron sharpening iron. Okay,
we got a quick call, Mike. Roger, we got Matt. All right. Matt on line one. You better make it quick, buddy.
Hey, Matt, how you doing, bro? Where are you calling from?
Yes, sir, Roger. I had a question. I heard you on the radio recently with a truncated affidavit. It was just one sentence.
Yes.
What's that sentence?
Well, I'm going to tell you what it is, and I'll tell you where to find it, okay? You can go to the State Department website, which is travel.state.gov. Travel.state.gov, and go into the search field and search for a document called a Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality. I'll repeat that, Matt. A Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality. When you get a selection there, just click on the first one, and that sentence is at the bottom of that page, at the end of a paragraph about somebody in Northern Mariana Islands. And that one sentence that'll get you out of the entire federal system is, I, Matt, do solemnly swear my desire and desire to be a national and not a citizen of the United States. And you go get that. You can have it, just sign it like that, or you can go get it notarized and send it to the Secretary of State. Don't have to do it with a passport application, but that's a little better because you'll get a passport card if you want to pay $30 issued to your new legal person as a national, and you're out of the federal system, pal.
Thank you, Roger.
Okay, Matt, come join us. Let me give, I guess, if somebody wants to contact me, Tom, they can do Radio Ranch, two words, no space, Radio Ranch at mail@mail.com. And if you want some information, just put Matrix Docs in the subject line, and I'll send you some audio, video, and printed material.
All righty. Well, sorry, John, we didn't get to you. We're going to have Roger back again, so... just stay tuned, and we'll, you know, give him some more time here. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate Roger for coming on board and helping us sift all this stuff out, and he will be back. So thanks again for everybody. Have a good night, and we will hopefully see you next Wednesday again.
See y'all.
DLB Talk
Night,
is
Tom.
The cure. DLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, DLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. DLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.